Welcome to the chapter on molecular biology. In the first section, we'll be discussing DNA replication. Let's get started. This is a detailed figure of the structure of DNA, which can be found in section 1 of molecular biology. From the figure, you can see small little rectangular shapes protruding out of the DNA double helix right here. And these represent the nucleotides adenine, thymine, cytosine, and guanine. Remember, adenine nucleotides on one strand pair with thymine nucleotides on the opposite strand. So A pairs with T. Likewise, guanine on one strand pairs with cytosine on the opposite strand. So C and G pair with each other. In this way, the two strands are complementary to one another. The negatively charged DNA is tightly wrapped around the positively charged histones, which you can see right here. When DNA is wrapped around a cluster of 8 histones, this is called a nucleosome. You can see that right here. Histone 1, or H1, is the histone responsible for linking nucleosomes together. Notice that this particular histone is unique because it's located outside of the histone core. You can see that right here. The nucleosomes are then packed tightly together, resulting in the formation of a chromosome. You can see a chromosome right here. Notice that when the nucleosomes are packed tightly together, this is called heterochromatin, which you can see right here. DNA packed in this way is not accessible to transcription proteins, so it cannot be transcribed into mRNA. We'll talk more about transcription in more detail in another video. DNA packed loosely together is called euchromatin. You can see that right here. Euchromatin is transcriptionally active, so it can be transcribed into mRNA. Sometimes it can be difficult to remember the difference between euchromatin and heterochromatin. I use the sound of U in euchromatin to help me remember that euchromatin can be used by the cell. So U used. In other words, the cell can transcribe the DNA found in euchromatin. Okay, one more thing about DNA structure before we move on. When histones are methylated, this usually represses DNA transcription. When histones are acetylated, this usually activates DNA transcription. Some students remember this with the mnemonic methyl equals mute, so methylation mutes DNA transcription. And acetylation activates DNA transcription, so acetyl equals active. Okay, let's do a question. A new experimental drug is found to inhibit histone deacetylase. How will this drug most likely alter transcription? Okay, in order to get this question right, you need to know how the acetylation of histones normally alters the activity of transcription. Let's draw this out. This will represent a histone, and in this case, let's say this histone has an acetyl group. So as we just discussed, when histones are acetylated, this usually activates DNA transcription, so increased transcription. The enzyme deacetylase removes acetyl groups on histones. So if the histone is deacetylated, then transcription will be decreased. So decreased transcription. In the question, we're told that the drug works by inhibiting histone deacetylase. In other words, this would result in more acetyl groups bound to histones. So as you can see, this drug would most likely increase transcription. Okay, let's transition and discuss DNA replication. This is a detailed figure of DNA replication, which can be found in section 1 of molecular biology. This figure is a little overwhelming at first glance, so we'll walk through each step. However, I do think this figure is a great overview once you understand the process. You should know that DNA replication is slightly different in eukaryotes compared to prokaryotes. As we walk through DNA replication, I'll be drawing it out from the perspective of a prokaryotic organism. These will represent the two strands of DNA. The top strand will be from the 3' to 5' direction, and the bottom strand will be from the 5' to 3' direction. During the first part of DNA replication, the enzyme helicase comes to the site and separates the two strands. So I've drawn DNA helicase right here, separating the two strands. The region where helicase unwinds the DNA is called the replication fork. As the DNA separates, single-stranded DNA binding proteins bind to the DNA, which I'll show right here. These proteins prevent the two DNA strands from re-annealing. The region where DNA replication begins is called the origin of replication. Next, primase anneals to the 3' end of the DNA and synthesizes a primer. So primase binds and it synthesizes a primer in this direction. So this will represent the primer right here, which is made of RNA, and because it's complementary to the DNA, it's in the 5' to 3' direction. I'll also draw the primase enzyme leaving the DNA right here. Next, DNA polymerase 3 binds to the primer and adds deoxynucleotides onto the 3' end of the primer. So DNA polymerase 3 synthesizes new DNA in this direction. In other words, it's synthesizing DNA in the 5' to 3' direction. So as you can see, this solid line represents the primer. And as DNA polymerase 3 moves towards the replication fork, the newly synthesized DNA is represented by the dotted lines. You should also know that DNA polymerase 3 has the ability to move backwards, or in other words, in this direction. This is towards the 5' end of the DNA, and this is done in order to proofread the newly synthesized strand of DNA. If it catches an error, it can then remove the base, so the enzyme is also called an exonuclease. For this reason, DNA polymerase 3 is said to be a 5' to 3' synthetic enzyme with 3' to 5' exonuclease activity. The bottom strand is also being replicated at the same time as the top strand. However, the bottom strand must be synthesized in a slightly different way. So, similar to what we just discussed, primase, which I'll draw right here, anneals to the 3' end of the DNA and synthesizes a primer in this direction. So again, the primer will be represented as a solid line, and the 5' end is right here, while the 3' end is right here. We'll also draw the enzyme primase leaving the replication site. Next, DNA polymerase 3 binds to the primer and adds deoxynucleotides onto the 3' end of the primer. So DNA polymerase 3 synthesizes new DNA in this direction. Just like with the top strand, it's synthesizing DNA in the 5' to 3' direction. As DNA polymerase 3 moves away from the replication fork, I'll represent the newly synthesized DNA with dotted lines. This brings up an important point. One side of DNA is replicated towards the replication fork, and the other, represented here in the bottom drawing, is synthesized away from the replication fork. Now imagine that helicase continues to unwind the DNA, so DNA replication will continue in this direction. This means the DNA, right here, will open up and the top strand can replicate continuously. The bottom strand, however, cannot replicate continuously. So now let's draw a new part of the image to show that we've moved slightly to the left in the replication process. Again, these dotted lines will represent the DNA. Notice that I didn't draw a solid line because we'll assume that the primer is now out of the image and further to the right, so it'd be somewhere over here. So again, this is really important for you to understand. DNA polymerase 3, which I'll draw right here, can synthesize DNA continuously on the top strand because it's being synthesized towards the replication fork. The name for the strand being synthesized in this direction is called the leading strand. However, because DNA polymerase can only synthesize DNA in the 5' to 3' direction, the bottom strand must be synthesized discontinuously away from the replication fork. So I'll draw a new segment of DNA right here. This solid line will represent the primer, and these dotted lines will represent a portion that was replicated. The name for this strand is called the lagging strand. So rather than one smooth process synthesizing DNA on both strands, the bottom strand must undergo several additional steps. Just like before, primase binds to the 3' end of the DNA near the replication fork, right here. It can then synthesize a primer in this direction. So again, the primer will be represented right here as the solid line, and the 5' end is right here, and the 3' end is right here. This will represent primase leaving the replication site. Next, DNA polymerase 3 binds to the new primer and adds deoxynucleotides onto the 3' end of the primer. So DNA polymerase 3 synthesizes new DNA in this direction. Again, it's synthesizing DNA in the 5' to 3' direction. As DNA polymerase 3 moves away from the replication fork, I'll represent the newly synthesized DNA with dotted lines. As the replication fork continues to move to the left in this direction, you can see that this process will have to be repeated many times on the bottom strand. This brings up an important dilemma. Notice that the bottom strand will contain many RNA primers. You can see two right here in this image. And notice also that these separate the fragments of DNA. These fragments are also known as Okazaki fragments. In order to remove the RNA primers and make the bottom strand one continuous strand of DNA, a few more important steps need to happen. DNA polymerase 1 binds to the RNA primers and enzymatically degrades them. It also replaces this region with DNA. So I'll replace the solid lines which represented the primers with dotted lines to represent newly synthesized DNA. I'll also show the DNA polymerase 1 enzymes leaving the replication site. As you can see, DNA polymerase 1 synthesizes DNA in the same direction as DNA polymerase 3, but it also has the ability to remove primers as it moves from the 5' to 3' direction. In this way, DNA polymerase 1 is said to be a 5' to 3' exonuclease. Also notice that there are now two Okazaki fragments with a gap between them. This gap needs to be repaired, and this happens through an enzyme known as DNA ligase. So DNA ligase binds to the DNA strands, and as it moves across them, it replaces the gap regions with a phosphodiester bond and joins the two Okazaki fragments. DNA ligase leaves the site, and now you can see that we have two fully continuous strands of DNA shown on the top and the bottom regions. As this process continues, the DNA in front of the replication fork, so this region right here, gets tied up in a knot. These knots are also known as supercoils. In order for replication to properly proceed, the supercoils need to be removed, and this occurs through an enzyme called topoisomerase II, which is also known as DNA gyrase. Topoisomerases are an important target for many drugs, including antibiotics and chemotherapeutic agents. In prokaryotic organisms, fluoroquinolone antibiotics inhibit topoisomerase II and IV. In eukaryotic organisms, the chemo drugs irinotecan and topotecan inhibit topoisomerase 1, and etoposide and teniposide inhibit topoisomerase 2. Okay, one more point to be familiar with before we move on. Distinguishing between DNA polymerase 1 and DNA polymerase 3 is incredibly high yield, but sometimes it can be difficult to remember the differences between them. I find it most helpful to use two mnemonics to keep things straight. The first mnemonic is DNA polymerase 1 only goes one direction. Notice that DNA polymerase 1 synthesizes and removes DNA by going in the 5' to 3' direction. So it synthesizes and it removes DNA in the 5' to 3' direction. DNA polymerase 3, on the other hand, goes in two directions. It synthesizes DNA in the 5' to 3' direction and removes DNA in the 3' to 5' direction. So remember, DNA polymerase 1 only goes in one direction. If you remember this, you should be able to remember that DNA polymerase 3 goes in multiple directions. The other mnemonic is contrive at 5. Contrive means to create or bring something about. So both DNA polymerase enzymes contrive DNA or synthesize DNA starting from the 5' end. Notice that DNA polymerase 1 and DNA polymerase 3 synthesize in the 5' to 3' direction. Okay, hopefully by using these mnemonics, you can keep things straight. With this in mind, let's discuss telomerase. A telomere is simply the region at the end of a chromosome. Telomerase is an enzyme that adds DNA to the 3' end of chromosomes to prevent the loss of genetic material with every duplication. Let's draw this out. These will represent two strands of DNA. So we'll draw the DNA being replicated right here. Notice that the top strand, or the leading strand, does not contain primers, whereas the bottom strand, or the lagging strand, does contain a primer. This region right here will represent the end of the chromosome. Normally, the DNA polymerase, RNA nuclease, and DNA ligase enzymes are used to remove the RNA primers, synthesize new DNA in its place, and seal the Okazaki fragments like we discussed. However, in order to do this, there must be another DNA strand to the left of the primer, so right here. Because this particular primer is at the end of the chromosome, there isn't any DNA to the left of it, so the primer cannot be degraded in the traditional way. Notice that if the primer were allowed to be left here, then over time, the chromosome would become shorter and shorter as fragments of copied DNA is lost. The way the cell prevents this from happening is through the enzyme telomerase. Before telomerase can come to the replication site, the RNA primer is enzymatically destroyed. Telomerase then anneals to the DNA. The telomerase enzyme also has a strand of RNA within its own structure, which I'll draw right here, and this allows it to synthesize DNA on the end of the chromosome. So I'll draw more DNA being shown right here. The telomerase enzyme leaves, and DNA polymerase can then anneal to the new strand of DNA. So DNA polymerase is synthesizing DNA in this direction. Notice that now the region where the RNA primer was is now filled in with new DNA, and a small region of DNA hangs off the end of the strand right here. Okay, before we move on, you should know that telomerase is important for normal cell division, but also that this enzyme can be upregulated in cancer cells, which makes sense, right? Cancer cells divide a lot, and increased telomerase activity even in cells that would otherwise not divide, allows these malignant cells to continue dividing without undergoing apoptosis. Likewise, stem cells and other cells that must continually divide have increased telomerase activity, whereas skeletal muscle cells, neurons, and mature red blood cells will have decreased telomerase activity because these cells do not divide. So increased telomerase activity in cancer cells and decreased telomerase activity in red blood cells, skeletal muscle cells, and neurons. Here's an overview slide that summarizes what we just covered. Hopefully now that you've seen the process from start to finish, this makes more sense. Okay, let's solidify this information with some questions. A pathologist is studying DNA from Staph aureus wound infections. She isolates an enzyme and studies its activity during DNA replication. She finds that this particular enzyme possesses 5' to 3' exonuclease activity. What enzyme has she most likely isolated? Okay, the question is essentially asking what DNA polymerase has 5' to 3' exonuclease activity. Recall that this is DNA polymerase 1. Hopefully you remembered the mnemonics we discussed earlier. Remember, DNA polymerase 1 synthesizes and removes DNA by going in the 5' to 3' direction. Remember the mnemonics, DNA polymerase 1 only goes one direction and contrive at 5. Okay, let's do another question. A 76-year-old male is admitted to the hospital for community-acquired pneumonia. A sputum culture is obtained in hopes of isolating the pathogen and determining antibiotic sensitivity. As the organism grows, its DNA is extracted and analyzed. Detailed analysis of fragments from partially replicated DNA reveals the presence of ribose sugar molecules with an increased number of hydroxyl modifications. These fragments are most likely degraded by what enzyme during DNA replication? Okay, the most important part of this question is right here. Detailed analysis of fragments from partially replicated DNA reveals the presence of ribose sugar molecules with an increased number of hydroxyl modifications. This is getting at the difference between DNA and RNA. Recall that the sugar in DNA is deoxyribose, and the sugar in RNA is ribose. Therefore, ribose contains one more hydroxyl group than deoxyribose. So the question stem is telling us that the analysis has revealed the presence of RNA. From the overview figure, recall that during DNA replication, RNA is present in the form of primers. You can see these RNA primers right here. So the question is really asking how RNA primers are degraded. Recall that this occurs by the enzyme DNA polymerase 1.